जय ओम विष्णु पाद परमहंस परिगज गचारण भक्ति वेदांत स्वामी श्री प्रभुपाद की अनंत कोटि वैष्णव वृंद की गौर प्रेमानंदी slimmer audience this morning. Not a holiday. Let's see what happens on Christmas Day. Same theme. Following the footsteps of our great acharyas and the personalities of Srimad Bhagavatam to help us connect with Krishna. Yesterday, during the Sunday program, we saw this yin-yang image. It connects with Bhagavad Gita's teaching, or the Vedic teaching, that there is a realm of the absolutes. The absolute truth has his abode. And there is this place. This is a reflection of that place. And this place is a place of duality. So, in this place of duality, there's the appearance of happiness and distress. And so the discussion this morning is similar to yesterday, how to go beyond, if you remember that nice paragraph, the sage of steady mind is one who is not elated when there's some sense of enjoying the objects of the senses that look nice, nor unhappy when there's the sense objects look unpleasant, but they're in a situation above that. And that's the stage of steady mind, and we're not sages of steady mind yet, at least most of us. So we have to learn something that's preliminary to that sage of steady mind position. And that's accepting the arrangements when it's this or that, and remain balanced or equipoised when it's this or that. And there's some verses and prayers within Srimad Bhagavatam that teach us about this. And we're going to start with Mother Suniti, the mother of Dhruva, after she hears what happened in the palace, because she's at a distant place. She's just totally neglected by the king. And so she doesn't even stay in the palace anymore. She's at a distant place. And when her son comes, crying, weeping, lips trembling in anger because of the harsh way that he has been dealt with, and the neglect of his father, she's feeling negative emotion, but she's also in a different mood. She's in the mood of comforting her son, but passing on what she has to her son to go beyond that negative emotion. And one of the higher teachings virtues that she has and she's attempting to pass on to her son is this one. Mamangalam tata pareshu mangstha. So this amangalam, My dear son, don't wish for anything inauspicious for others. Anyone who utilizes, anyone who inflicts pains upon others suffers himself from that pain. Now there's two meanings to this we're going to explore. This amangalam is translated in different ways. Mangala we know, auspicious. And amangalam is inauspicious. So don't wish anything inauspicious for others. And that means, so that don't feel ill will towards others. Don't wish she's going to get hers, or I'm going to make sure she gets hers, or anything like that. Don't do like that. Don't be in this get back spirit. Don't, similar but different, don't find fault. That's this amangalam message translated by Vishwanath Chakrabarti Thakur. Do not fault find in others, because those who have given suffering to others previously will receive the same in this life. Now that can mean if you wish ill of her, you're going to get ill back. So don't fault find. That's a very important basic teaching about in this world of duality, there's unpleasant things. And when you see those unpleasant things, you feel some unpleasant emotion. And one of the tendencies, material tendencies, is to fault the source of that negative thing, and that you made me feel bad. It's kind of, I was thinking about it this morning. I learned a lesson with my mother and father. Don't try to explain Krishna consciousness to them, because they don't want to hear it. And I had that intuitive sense that was saying, if I try to explain, then they will think I'm telling them you made a boo-boo. You blew it. You didn't teach me properly. And I'm big and you're small, so here's what the way it is. I intuitively understood that, so I didn't try to say anything. I let them just read Prabhupada's book, let Prabhupada say it, but not me, because I'm their son. And they bought Prabhupada's books and read Prabhupada's books. But one time visiting in our home, at the dinner table, curiously, my mother asked, why are you vegetarian? And I said, you know, what we're supposed to say. because the animal suffers. And I decided even before I became a devotee that I don't want to unnecessarily inflict suffering on others. So I decided to become vegetarian. And then my mother said, but it says in the Bible that man was given dominion over the animals. And I said the wrong thing. I said, when I was little, you had dominion over me. And my mother screamed and burst out in tears and ran away from the table. And my father said, you've made your mother cry. I didn't make my mother cry. She decided to cry. Because when things come that hurt, you have the choice to respond. You don't have to cry. You can say, well, hey, that was very interesting. I never thought of that before. That wasn't her response. Her response was the negative emotion, and she just blew up. And then my father was faulting me for causing her to cry. But we know from Bhagavad Gita, never three things. Never think yourself of the cause of action, the cause of the result of action, or inducing others to act. You can't make anybody cry. You can try to make some people cry, but they're not going to cry. And you can try to not make people cry, and they'll cry. You can't. So everything's being carried out by material nature, and material nature is conducted by three modes. So there's a mode that causes people to cry, and you can't induce that. The modes of nature, Prakriti, can do that. That doesn't mean you go around doing mean things because, hey, I'm at the door. We're responsible for what we do. But other people are responsible for how they respond to what you do. It's a very simple, people just glitch right over it kind of a thing. We're responsible for our emotions. So we have choices. This is a little teaching, really simple. Our karma, well, we're going to see it as we go along. Our karma determines what body we get. And our karma determines what events come our way while we're embodied going down the path of life. How we respond to those events on the path of life has to do with guna. It's not karmically driven. The events are set up by our past. Without all analyzing what I said and what my mother said and my mother's, thinking it's just okay. Man has dominion over animals. Carve them up. That's not what dominion means. Dominion means you protect. That's what dominion means. Could you go upstairs and get the power cord? No. Shravan, power cord for the computer. There's this little thing saying, my PC ran into a problem and it needs to restart. Could you get the power cord, please? Can you get the power cord from the room upstairs? Thanks. So karma, this whole acceptance of circumstances that Suniti is saying, and others will also say, this morning's discussion, it's we're responsible. We're responsible for the event, and we're also responsible for how we respond to the event. Yes? Sada sad yoni janmasu, Bhagavad Gita language. And that sada sad, or good fortune, ill fortune, what's the root of that good fortune, ill fortune? It's the free will choices that we make. And the free will choices that we make play out in the form of action. And for action, there's a result. You can say reaction, but there's a result. And the result is we're moving along the path of life, and here comes the result of my past action. And I take responsibility for those things that come my way. This is for one who's not a devotee, and when someone who is a devotee, we're going to hear a really nice teaching that says when you're a devotee, the things that come your way are arranged by the internal potency. It's not. Can you plug it in? It's not karma. as long as you're a devotee. It's not like you wear tilak and a dhoti and a sari and now you're a Hare Krishna devotee. It's you're a devotee. It means you're dedicating everything to Krishna's service. That's a devotee. So when you're connected with Krishna like that, then good fortune, ill fortune is a whole other picture. And we'll hear as we go along. In that case, the devotee is accepting Krishna's arrangements because he's my well-wisher. Well, I'm waiting for my computer to get well again. One of our favorite verses, Tate Nukampam Susamikshamano, this verse that's spoken by Brahma to Krishna in his prayers, Canto 10, Chapter 14. Brahma has just made a boo-boo. He interrupted Krishna's pastimes. You know, he was curious. He wanted to see what's the extent of Krishna's power. So he interrupted Krishna's pastimes. You know, the way he interrupted was he kidnapped the cowherd boys and the calves. You know, that's even in material way, that's criminal. Kidnapping is punishable by law. What to speak of Krishna's pastimes? Big boo-boo. And so he's understanding, I'm going to get a whack. I'm going to get a punishment for this offense. It's not just, you know, a crime. It's an offense against Krishna. So I'm going to get a reaction. And the verse, this one of our favorite verses, because we have bad things happen to us. We do some boo-boo, and we know something's going to come. And maybe you don't even remember what the boo-boo is, but here comes something. And it's uncomfortable. So now how do you respond when that something that's uncomfortable comes your way? This is a fantastic verse. If you're a devotee, you follow the path of Lord Brahma. And the path of Lord Brahma says, I accept. We can do a number of things. You can fault somebody else. This thing happened. You know, my son said to me, when I was small, you had dominion over me and you didn't make me your meal because you had dominion over me. You know, how insulting. So, you know, but it was a good lesson for her. She just didn't take it that way. And I stopped, even when they asked questions, I didn't even get into it. Because I understood it was a minefield. And the minefield was, I'm big, you're small, let me tell you the way it really is. And you messed up. I wasn't meaning that, but that's how they were taking it. So you're like, don't ask me questions. No, there's other ways to respond, but that was at least mom and dad. You know, they were happy that I'm happy, and that was enough. Don't ask me any questions. I don't try to explain anything. You can read Prabhupada's books. If you have some questions, you can ask me. Now, it's not, that's the standard. Different parents are different. My parents were my parents, and that was the plan that I went with. So, when misfortune comes your way, how do you respond? And, you know, the beginning instruction of Bhagavad Gita is you tolerate. There's duality. Matras, parshas, tukonte, asitushna, sukha, dukada. Tongues to tiksha, swabharata. You just tolerate it. because it's the nature of the place. It's a place of duality. Wait a while. It's one of the lessons for stress management or people that counsel those who have depression is wait a while. The night will pass and the sun will rise in the morning. That emotion is temporary. It's the message. And then another is that emotion is not you. You're the observer of the emotion, but the emotion is, but you know, material consciousness, you identify with the covering and I am that emotion. I'm angry. Or I'm sad. Or I'm whatever it is the emotion is. That's me. Not you. That's knowledge and detachment mentioned yesterday. Jnana Vairagya, knowledge and detachment. Let me go back to the presentation. The computer got well again. If we find fault in others, it's a double-edged sword. If you find fault in others, I want to blame them. That act is involving you in karma. You're buying into the karma program by blaming others. Don't blame others. Don't fault find. It ties you into karma. And another understanding is this one. Do not fault find, mangalam, in your stepmother. Do not find fault in your stepmother. You have experienced the result of sins you have committed in previous births, since the person who gives suffering to others in a previous life receives it back in this life. Take responsibility for your stepmother's harsh words. Now, it's not like the behavior of harsh words is okay. That's not what it means. We don't speak harsh words, and when harsh words are spoken to us, somewhere back there, we don't know, something back there, we dealt with somebody in such a way that here comes the reaction of my free will choice sometime in the past. Now, here comes the experience. Now, how are you going to respond? A do not is don't ill wish and don't fault find, because what you're doing by doing that is you're just connecting yourself to the karma machine. And it's just perpetuating and rolling on and rolling on and rolling on. Doesn't mean you have to like the behavior. Doesn't mean you don't have to have some feelings of hurt. The emotion is there. Now what are you going to do with that emotion? And what are you going to do about the behavior? Yeah, most people, well, they're different responses. Say something mean back. Or feel worthless. And I'm really crummy and bummy, and you know, I get this all the time. You know, sadness, depression. You know, go into that zone. That's another option that some people do, depending upon their guna. The advice that Suniti is giving and the Bhagavatam is giving us is: don't do either one of those. Don't go into the negative zone, and don't go into the throw it back zone. be in this position of accepting the instruments of our own karma. I've said this so many times, but it's a nice story. Peter Burwash was the keynote speaker for a number of years at the Festival of Inspiration. I gave it a nickname, the Festival of Precipitation, because every year when they had this event, it would rain in New Vrindavan. Now they have a different gathering. But Peter Burwash was the keynote speaker. Peter Burwash is a celebrity of sorts. He has written many books in the field of motivation. He's a motivational speaker for Fortune 500 companies. He's a celebrity of sorts. And he would share that every day in 364 days of the year, he would spend 10-15 minutes preparing his presentation for the Festival of Inspiration, the keynote speech, because it was a service that he was offering to Prabhupada and his followers. So one of the stories he would tell every time is this one. He started taking part in Krishna consciousness in Hawaii. At that time, he had a company. He was a trainer of tennis coaches who trained people in tennis. So he was earning money at a time when many of us kind of just like dropped out of college and we weren't earning money. We could have continued on and earned money, but we were doing what we were doing, just serving Prabhupada, living in the temple as brahmacharis and brahmacharinis, doing the Hare Krishna thing. And Peter had a business, so he had money, and so he gave money. He gave $500 to the temple president, and some days after he gave the $500, the president went away and took the $500. And when Peter found that out, he was upset. He had some negative emotion. And then sometime later, Prabhupada came to visit because he had this relationship with Prabhupada. And if those of you that have been to Hawaii, if just picture in your mind the Prabhupada's quarters, it's really a nice place without some long story. So he shared with Prabhupada what happened. And then what Prabhupada's response was, that's not very good. And then he said, but you're no better if you blame the instrument of your karma. Now what a thing to say when, I don't know if I could say that, if somebody just had, they had a really unfortunate thing happen, don't blame the instrument of your karma. But that's what Prabhupada said. And it stuck. He was able to receive it properly, and it stayed with him, and I'm just passing it on. So there's instruments of our own karma, and that's what Suniti is saying. Your stepmother spoke harshly because somewhere back there you did something harsh to somebody, maybe her or somebody, and it's coming back to you. So don't blame the instrument of your karma. Now what do you do if you don't blame the instrument of your karma? What's left? You decide how you're going to respond instead of blaming the instrument of your karma. There is an option. We're responsible for our emotions. We can't blame others. You hurt me. It goes on all the time in conversation. Or even if you don't say it, you feel it. He hurt me. That was my mother. I didn't hurt her. Come on. Don't inflict pain upon animals. That's not hurting her. Anyway, here's Vishwanath saying, Suniti was saying to Dhruva, she was also hurt. Not only, what happened to him, but what happened to her. She was just neglected. And indirectly, she didn't say these words, my weeping has been written on my forehead, by the Creator since birth. That is, she was neglected by her husband. Those of you that are married, so imagine you're just neglected by your husband. You're not even in the house. You're just like somewhere else. Now, that's not nice. Doesn't mean that the behavior is nice, that Uttanapada was neglecting her. Doesn't mean the behavior is nice. Doesn't mean that you can't have a negative emotion about being neglected. But there's this principle of acceptance. And then you can decide what you're going to do. Once you have accepted the event, life threw rocks at you, and it hurts. Accept. This is a counseling point when people are going through depression. I mean, some people can't hear it. You can't say it to some people, but that's part of how negative emotions get resolved. You just accept it. It's part of this duality thing. And I'm responsible for this asat, this misfortune. Now what am I going to do about it? Suniti decided, my son is the firstborn. He is entitled to become the king. I'm not going to be in this, huffy position. I'm just going to be quietly take care of my son. And one day he'll become the next king because he's according to our culture. He is to be the next king. So that was the decision she made in the midst of this acceptance. So we don't have to do what she did. We have to make decisions about how we're going to respond. This is one of these messages from the Dhruva seminar. React or respond. And while she's accepting, she wants her son to be happy. So she provides the means for her son to be happy to her capacity. Here's another scriptural example. This is, as you can see, it's from the Canto 1, Chapter 18, the story of Prikshit Maharaj draping a dead snake over the sage's shoulders because he didn't receive him when he was absorbed in meditation. So Prabhupada's comment, the devotees of the Lord are so forbearing that even though they are defamed, cheated, cursed, disturbed, neglected, or even killed, they are never inclined to avenge themselves. Now that's the elevated position of devotion, but that's the Bhagavatam's instruction for us. It's actually not a purport, it's a verse. So this principle of acceptance, some of you have seen this slide before. Credit for the message that you're about to see goes to Adi Purusha Prabhu, who's one of the Bhakti Shastri teachers in Vrindavan. Very learned person. So this language is his. When we don't accept an undesired event, it becomes anger. When we accept it, it becomes tolerance. When we don't accept uncertainty, it becomes fear. When we accept it, it becomes adventure. Like a life of sannyas, it's really quite an adventure. When I wake up in the morning, I have to figure out where I am. Because I don't, it's a different place regularly. When we don't accept others' bad behavior toward us, it becomes hatred. When we accept it, it becomes forgiveness. When we don't accept others' success, it becomes jealousy. When we accept it, it becomes inspiration. Acceptance is the key to handling life well. So this is a little seminar that he gives each of these points on Bhagavad Gita. and I haven't heard his seminar and how these points connect to Bhagavad Gita's message, but it's a good message. It's in the Bhagavatam explicitly. So let's continue and see how it's in the Bhagavatam explicitly. This is after Suniti instructs, then Narada instructs Dhruva. And Vishwanath's translation of this verse: one by intelligence should be satisfied with whatever amount of happiness and distress is attained by one's actions in previous lives, understanding that karma produces results under the direction of the Lord. So if you're faulting what happens, you're faulting the Lord, because somebody is the instrument of the Lord. You know, like my father chat, why are you making your mother cry? You know, that was the Lord speaking. I have to be very careful with my mother. Because she has triggers. And I don't pull her trigger. Okay. Thank you. You've seen this illustration. This is a BBT illustration. The details of it are very interesting, but it's mostly distress. In the image, material existence is mostly distressful, although people keep going for it because they think there's some happiness in there. And a similar phrase from the third canto Bhagavatam, this is the source, canto 3, karma na daivane trena, anyone who's heard Srila Prabhupada speak, he referred to this phrase again and again and again. It's used in reference to which body you get. It's karma. And which body you get is daiva netrena. It's under the supervision of superior authority. But it's not just the body you get, it's just, you know, the stuff that happens. When you go along each day, there's some unexpected things. You have a plan. And sure enough, it doesn't always work according to plan. And it can be good fortune, ill fortune, and here it comes. That's by divine arrangement, daivane trena, but it's driven by your karma. So we accept things that are driven by our karma, because what are we going to do anyways? It's driven by our karma. We two things. We choose how we're going to respond to whatever that thing is. And second is we try to make wise choices going forward in time about what we're going to do. Not only about, you know, the stuff, but, you know, what's the mission of our life? We can choose that. It's not karmically destined that we're going to become something or other. And even if it's karmically, let's say someone is destined to be poor, or someone is destined to be rich, using that as a common example. Strive and strive and strive. If you're destined to be poor, you're going to be poor. Strive and strive and strive. Or don't strive so much. The person who's destined to be rich, they're born with a silver spoon in their mouth, using Prabhupada's phrase. Now, how they're going to utilize that wealth, that's another thing. One of the things Prabhupada would say, a fool and his money are soon parted. Now, maybe your destiny to get some wealth, but if you're a fool, then bye-bye wealth. So there's guna and there's karma. And not destined you're going to get wealth and then you're going to fritter it away, or the other way around. We make wise free will choices going forward in time under the guidance of scripture and guru, and respond in a way that to whatever is coming your way, good fortune, ill fortune, in a manner of Krishna consciousness. Here's again Vishwanath glossing the same verse. The process, that's this good fortune, ill fortune, of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is very wonderful. One who is intelligent should accept that process and be satisfied with whatever comes, favorable or unfavorable, by his supreme will. Now, when you accept doesn't mean you're a blob. You're like a stone and you don't have any emotion. You don't have any, you're a blob. That's not what it means. You make choices, emotional and action, both. Further, this is again Narada speaking, similar message. You see highlighted here is toshayan. Tosha means become satisfied. One should try to keep himself satisfied in any condition of life, whether distress or happiness, which is offered by the supreme will. Very similar message. A person who endures in this way is able to cross over the darkness of nescience very easily. This is the acceptance message. This is Narada to Dhruva. And how do you remain satisfied? Well, it's similar to what we discussed yesterday. Remember that opening slide, the sage of steady mind. Because the mind is reading happiness and distress. That's where the emotion is situated, in the mind. It's neither happiness nor distress. It's just read that way. The lock system. Pretty loud. The satisfied is rooted in, I have a relationship with Krishna, and I'm satisfied in my relationship with Krishna. Yenatma suprasediti. Right? Suprasediti. I'm satisfied, completely satisfied in my relationship with Krishna. So here comes some good fortune, here comes some ill fortune. It's not going to budge me from my relationship with Krishna, it's my real happiness, it's my real satisfaction. Now I'm going to decide how to deal with this good fortune, ill fortune circumstance. And that's the position of being satisfied, the stage of steady mind, guided by intelligence. And that intelligence is how to go to Krishna in this place of duality that we live in. Vishwanath writes, the key to surpass samsara is acceptance of current condition and remain determined to move into Krishna consciousness. Now, he doesn't use Krishna consciousness. Satisfying himself amidst happiness and distress with these experiences, which are given to him by karma, the embodied person surpasses samsara. Let's say it negatively. Supposing you don't accept. Supposing you're not satisfied in your relationship with Krishna. You're buying into the duality program, the karma program, and the samsara program. That's a choice. Bhakti has the power to move you to the right choice. And we have to receive bhakti and nourish bhakti in the proper way. That's the message. So this is the final verse, our famous one. Let's say it together. Tate nukampam susamikshamano bunjana evatma kritam vipakam ridvagapurbir vididhan namaste jiveta yomukti pade sadayavat. Now, it's color-coded. Jiveta is really interesting. Jiva Goswami says, what this means is all you have to do is live. Like the sun, this is Prabhupada's rendering, in Indian culture or in Vedic culture, the sun inherits the property of the father. All he has to do is survive the father. Of course, he inherits the debts of the father too. But you inherit the father's property. All you have to do is survive. Jivaita. So in the case of bhakti, just survive in your commitment to being in Krishna's shelter. And you will inherit the property of your father. What's the property of your father? In the case of Brahma, it's the spiritual world. Who is his father? Garbhadakshe Vishnu. You go back to Godhead. Just stay fixed in this principle. That's this anukampam. That's he waits for you to bestow your causeless mercy. And susamikshamano is earnestly waits for you to bestow your causeless mercy. Vipakam, that's reaction. So I do stuff and there's a result, good and bad. So you just accept the good and the bad, the reactions. His past misdeeds, that's the bad stuff. Atma kritam. So, my dear Lord, Brahma to Krishna, one who earnestly waits for you to bestow your causeless mercy upon him, all the while patiently suffering the reactions of his past misdeeds and offering you respectful obeisances with his heart. That's the acceptance and progress. Stays fixed in devotional service. Obeisances with his heart, words, and body is surely eligible for liberation. Muktipade. For it has become his rightful claim. Very important verse. When you, next time you're distressed or you know somebody is going through some distress, may happen, this is a good verse to remember for yourself and depending upon where the person is at, what space they're in at the moment. It's good to remind them of this verse, of the principle. Stay fixed in bhakti. This just recently happened. Somebody's mother died unexpectedly in India, and the person whose mother died had to rush off and deal with all the negative emotion of all the family members and relatives and their own. So somebody was very close to that person whose mother died, and they wrote to me saying, I'm feeling fearful and lots of anxiety. What should I do? So I was in the midst of 18 things. So I said, your counselor, your advisor, see if they can help you. So they wrote back, said, just take shelter of Krishna. I don't know if he referred to this verse, but that was his message. Death is inevitable, and when death comes, it's inevitable. What are you going to do about the inevitable? But don't budge an inch. That's how Prabhupada spoke about this verse. Brahma's commitment. I will not budge an inch from my commitment to the lotus feet of Krishna. Here comes this adverse circumstance. It hasn't come yet. He knew something's going to come. I've done a big boo-boo, and I'm going to get a big reaction. I offended Krishna. That's a big boo-boo. And something's going to come, I accept it. That's what Maharaj Pariksit did when he knew, as he's going back to the palace, having put the snake around the sage's neck, why did I do that? Big offense. I'm going to get a big reaction. And in his heart, he had already resolved, whatever it is, I'm just going to accept it. When he found out what it is, he accepted it. He took some action after accepting it. He could have tried something. Reduce, counteract, something, something. He just accepted it. Now that's what he did. So we can make, when you accept, then your intelligence is freed to make prudent choices. If you're not accepting, what happens? The intelligence gets really bewildered. You don't know what's what. You think maybe it's this, maybe it's that, and very fearful, very lonely, very isolated, very like, space. So, what does the future hold for us? Who knows? Some people say, well, it's just destined. I was going to become a Hare Krishna devotee, and so I became a Hare Krishna devotee. And some other people, it's just not destined, and so too bad for them, because it's just not. But we're the architect of our own destiny. Here's a painting of Prithu Maharaj when he's becoming coronated the king. Here's Lord Shiva offering him some scepter that he'll use as the king. Lord Vishnu is there. And he knows that Vishnu wants to give him a benediction, and he's saying, you know what? Whatever he wants. This is the Sanskrit. Yatha charid bala hitam pita svayam. As a father, not waiting for the son's demand, does everything for the benefit of the son, please bestow upon me whatever you think is best for me. I'm ready. And it can be this or that. In the case of Chitraketu, he became very elevated Vaishnav, and he was cursed by Parvati. What did he do? I accept. Indra, because Krishna wanted to help him overcome his pride, Krishna did what Krishna did, and he was accepting the kindness of Krishna in overcoming his pride. This verse, Prabhupada writes in Nectar Devotion, this Tat Te Nukampam, this is from Nectar Devotion. This statement of Srimad Bhagavatam should be the guide of all the devotees. That is the only solace. If the devotee passes his days in that spirit, it is certain that he is going to be promoted to the abode of the Lord. So, it's good advice, right? Here's Jiva Goswami commenting. All you have to do is simply be alive. Alive in devotion. Alive and awake in your relationship with Krishna. And this is our last text. This is Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's explanation. Now that other processes have been rejected, that's the first seven verses. This is number eight. And bhakti accepted as the process to attain Bhagavan, the process of bhakti is described. The devotee understands that the happiness and distress that he experiences due to performing bhakti and committing aparads are the mercy of the Lord. It is like that father who sometimes makes his child drink milk and sometimes makes him drink bitter nimba juice. Nim juice is bitter. And sometimes embraces and kisses him and sometimes beats him. The devotee thinks that this is the arrangement of the Lord working for his benefit. Quote, the Lord knows, and I do not know. Karma and time have no effect on the devotee, so it is his personal arrangement. By his mercy, he sometimes gives me happiness and sometimes gives me distress. considering how to engage me in her service. Now, that's a high position, but that's part of acceptance, is to come to that high position. And when that acceptance is there, then there's real peace. And without it, there's no peaceful situation. It's very unstable. Okay, so that's the morning message. See if there's any comments or thoughts on all of this. Yeah. Right in the front. Thank you.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. Maharaj, sometimes we hear that if someone is not progressing in devotional service, if someone is stagnant, it means like he goes down. Like if someone is not progressing in devotional service,
yes,
and someone is stagnant, so sometimes seniors,
yes,
say that it goes down.
Yes.
So what I understood, or maybe I understood it wrongly, so what Jiva Goswami says, you just have to be alive in devotional service. So,
well, alive in devotional service means alive in devotional service, not just you're surviving, you're still breathing, and your heart's still beating. Alive in devotional service.
So it means like progressing in devotional service, that's what it
is. Of course. Well, you know, yes, yes.
Okay.
At least trying. At least trying.
Okay, yeah. Okay, so basically like somebody should not misconstruct to think that, okay, like alive means, okay, whatever I was doing 10 years before also, I was doing this much chanting,
right,
or this much service. So after 10 or 20 years, like your chanting or service
take
should
take a vacation. Complacency, not that.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay.
Guru Maharaj, from the verse of Lord Brahma, when you were reading that verse, the relationship between the second part of the verse, which is directing his attention toward progress, and he's anticipating that the reaction is going to come, and he's proactively redirecting his energy toward being proactively on the side of being, the aspect of progress. So one of the things that I was kind of relating with the class...
Speak like, slower.
Sure.
I'm straining to hear and it's hard to hear. Slower and stronger.
Sure. So this,
not the whole thing, just forward.
Yeah, moving forward. So this aspect of acceptance, like when you were talking about that how the devotee sees is the internal potency acting, but that depends upon when we are actively acting as a devotee, not just, you know, behavior, but really having that consciousness, then it's internal potency. Otherwise...
Then what?
Then it's the internal potency, not the karma acting.
I'm not sure what you're saying.
So
let's go to the Peter Burwash story. What the person did, took his $500 and ran away with the $500. That wasn't the internal potency. That person was in Maya, and that person is responsible for his choices. But now that person was also an instrument for Peter Burwash. And Prabhupada wanted him to understand how to see that event. The behavior was, you know, unlawful and sinful. He stole Krishna's property, not just Peter Burwash's property. So now, back to your question, using that example rather than your own, say your question again.
So my question is like, I see myself struggling with the aspect of acceptance, and one of the way I'm relating is that if the acceptance becomes goal, then it's like...
If the acceptance becomes...
Itself is the goal, that the goal is I want to stay...
The goal? If acceptance becomes the goal...
That I need to come to that level of acceptance.
That's not the goal, that's a step.
Right. So the focus if the focus remains on progress and being proactive,
yes,
in progress,
yes,
that helps in coming to this place.
Exactly. 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 Say it in reverse. If I don't accept, my sense of the goal is going to be obscured. I'm going to have another goal instead of the goal. And I'm involved in karma. I'll be involving myself in action, reaction. Yes. Confirming with your statement. So behind you.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. My question is, so there is this scene, right? Suruchi insulting Dhruva in front of his father.
What?
Suruchi?
Suruchi, the nasty one.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Insulting Dhruva in front of his father.
Yes.
Okay. So, I've seen something recently.
Speak slowly. People don't have... Be kind to me.
Okay. Sorry, Maharaj. I have seen something recently where a father is chastising his wife in front of his son.
Okay. This is the wife offending the son in front of the father.
Right, right.
But sometimes it's the father offending the son in front of the wife.
No, this is father insulting the wife.
In front of the son.
Right, to pamper him.
Okay.
Well, that's a complete different scenario. So from a child point of view, I know child is just whining at that time, in that situation, but there is no need for the father to insult the wife in front of the child.
Of course
right?
not.
So the situation that Suruchi was in, I mean, of course, it's her choice to insult Dhruva. It's on purpose. Definitely it's a bad thing. But what can the father do? How can he, what could have he
what
done?
Could, what are right. the options for Uttanapada when
right.
that thing happened?
Right. I'm trying to understand from a parent to understand the needs of a child.
Yeah.
Sometimes I do see myself not supporting my own children. Sometimes because...
You're in your own autobiography.
Sometimes.
Yeah, sometimes.
So, what could he have done correctly?
What could he have done? That's
right.
your question.
Right.
Well, we can make a brainstorm list, and there's probably 20 things he could have done. You want to know when you want to? Should we do a brainstorm session? Is that what you're looking for?
Yeah, I'm trying to understand how to handle that situation from a parent.
It's the same question: how to handle the situation. It depends, because you know, depends on him, depends on the son, depends on Suruchi. What he said later is, I didn't even pat him once. That's an option. Just like, invite the son on his lap and embrace him. Even after Suruchi said what she said. That's an option. He doesn't have to say anything, just comfort his son and be accepting of his son. Now he could say something also. Or not, you know, there's so many. He could say, Suruchi, this is not appropriate way to speak to your stepson. He's a nice boy. And whatever else he could have said. You know, Suruchi, my son, all of us in our royal family, we are to take shelter of the personality of God. That part was nice. But your son is on my lap, and the elder son is Dhruva, and I'm going to place him on my lap. He doesn't have to take birth from your womb in order to sit on my lap. Mm-hmm. That wasn't nice. So please apologize. You know, it depends. There's so many things he could have said and done.
Thank you, Maharaj.
Thank you, Maharaj. I was remembering in your narration how Narad Muni's mom passes, and he seems to appreciate that. And I was wondering if that, from acceptance, is it necessary to move into appreciation, or is acceptance enough to then see Krishna?
I'm not sure what you're asking. If you remain silent and just internally you're accepting, is that enough? Is that your question?
I guess I'm implying or seeing, at least in the case of Narad Muni, when his mom passes, that he appreciated this as an arrangement of Krishna for me to come closer to him.
Yeah.
So we can imagine, we don't hear from Suta Goswami particularly.
Slowly, please. We can imagine what?
We can imagine that Narad Muni moved through some emotions.
Yeah.
To come to that place of appreciation.
Oh, yeah.
And is that level necessary? Because the verse, Tatena Kampam, implies acceptance.
Yeah.
Is sufficient, we can say.
But acceptance, I learned a lot, and I'll share some of what I learned from the Dhruva story. There's like 6 different negative emotions that his mother experiences when she hears and she sees her son. So, it's not that we're not supposed to contact negative emotion. That's not a rule. Acceptance doesn't mean don't have any negative emotions enter your mind. It's how you respond to them. When somebody does something, no, it may be you don't. Here's a little Prabhupada story. This is Hari Sori. The devotees were riding in a car, and they were going on that Delhi-Agra road. And you know how it is in India. There was an accident, no one did anything about the accident. There was a car all mangled. There was another car that hit the mangled car, and there was the body of the driver of the mangled car stretched out on the pavement with, you know, limbs disconnected with other parts of their body. And the devotees were going, oh no. And Prabhupada was just chanting. He was detached. Now, does that mean he didn't have any negative emotion about the pain that man went through? Who can say? I don't want to predicate the mind of our founder Acharya. But he wasn't caught in that negative emotion, like, oh, you know, but at other times he would exhibit, like we saw yesterday, I cry, seeing the suffering that people go through unnecessarily. But such a person, like in this case, you know, Narada when he was a little boy, we don't know, because it doesn't say. When we can imagine, he's a little boy, he's attached to his mother, there's no mention at all of his father, that's his only shelter. There was some negative emotion, we can imagine. But that's not described, it's just he accepted this as a providential arrangement and moved on. So, does that answer your question? I see a lot of hands up.
Hare Krishna, Guru Maharaj. In your sharing of the interaction with your mother...
Saying what?
In your sharing of your interaction with your mom...
Yeah.
I'm trying to understand from the other person's perspective. I understand from the mom... it's her choice to cry. She could have chose not to cry and respond in a different way. But from the other person, I mean, I'm not saying...
My father.
From your perspective. I mean, I'm saying if I am in that position of... From their side, they can understand I'm the instrument of Krishna. But from my side, what precaution? Sometimes I may not even intend to... cause that suffering or anger or whatever it is.
Yeah, I wasn't intending.
Yeah, exactly. So from that side, how do we understand or what should be our mode?
If I could hit a replay button, what would I do knowing that my mother might cry? Is that what you're asking? Or for the future? Well, for the future, I decided to just, you know, button my lip. I'm not going to volunteer anything because there's landmines out there and I don't want to blow anybody up. Not myself, or, you know, and the relationship. I don't want to. So let them just be happy that I'm happy. That was, so that's the decision that I made. Now, I could have gone through the landmine. That was a choice. And then if somebody gets blown up, somebody gets blown up. But it, maybe it's good that they get blown up because they have some misconceptions. That was an option. I chose not to. That's me and at least my mother and father. No, my siblings, that's another story. But mother and father, there was already, so my reading was what it was. There's already sensitivity. I have to be really careful. So the way I'm going to be careful is and sometimes that's a proper response. Now, sometimes it's not a proper response. Sometimes, so. Again, we're individuals and Super Soul is guiding us in certain ways and we have our own filters hearing Super Soul signal and we sometimes don't get the signal right and we mess up in another way. Maybe I messed up in another way. I could have stepped on some more landmines and, you know, let them get some light instead of darkness. That's a possibility. In the back, behind you.
Hare Krishna, Guru Maharaj. So, in the light of today's message, I'm not able to reconcile how in Mahabharata Bhima took a vow to drink the blood of the Shasana, or so, like, acceptance is the message. So mainly my question is, what are the circumstances when we are really supposed to act? What does Krishna wants?
Well, Bhima's Bhima. Like, you're not Bhima, and I'm not Bhima. So he's a Kshatriya, and it's a Kshatriya's duty to punish when someone has made a severe transgression or commensurate with transgression. You don't just like, it's not an option for a Kshatriya. You just tolerate. Prabhupada describes this so much in Bhagavad Gita specifically. Arjuna is saying, I'm out of here. And Krishna is saying, what? This is your duty. These are transgressors, punishable by law, by Vedic law. And you're qualified to administer, and you're not going to administer? How has this weakness of heart come across you? So you have to become violent. That's the language Prabhupada was using. You're speaking nonviolence. It's your duty when there's transgressors, commensurate with the transgression, to use strength. That's your duty. So now, drinking blood, I don't know if that's like, you know, part of the duty. That's Bhima. You know, he's an intense. You want to add to this?
I wanted to roll it out.
Okay, but we've got Hey Monkey waiting in the wings. So come over here with just on this one point, and then Hey Monkey, and then we're going to end.
I wanted to run this by you, Maharaj. Ujjwal Prabhu and I were discussing that, as in the case of Bhagavad Gita and Battle of Kurukshetra,
yeah,
Krishna is explaining they're all going to die anyway.
Yeah.
And so asking Arjuna to fight is asking him to relate to their death from a place where he'll be able to process it in a Krishna conscious way.
Yeah. Yeah.
And if he wasn't on the battlefield, then later on the emotions related to all that happened anyway would be difficult for him to go through.
Yeah.
Whereas on the battlefield, he's able to accept and come to peace.
Yeah.
Because that's his nature.
Another way of saying the same thing It's saying the same thing in another way, which is, Arjun, supposing you have your way and you leave the battlefield and you know what these fellows have done, you'll be sitting in a cave thinking, that rascal, Duryodhana. You're a Kshatriya. It's going to be there. So now, how do you deploy that emotion? You have to deploy it according to theistic conduct. And I'm telling you, this is the theistic conduct. This is the plan. This is my plan. So, then you connect that emotion to Krishna's plan. We may not know what Krishna's plan is. Usually we don't. But Arjuna had that facility. And at least, you know, codes of conduct according to theistic instruction. That's what we do, as best as we can. Go ahead.
So maybe then in this case, Bhima, had Dushasana been punished by the law of Krishna eventually for his transgression, if Bhima hadn't been the instrument of that, he would have lived his whole life in regret and been distracted.
She's not questioning Bhima wanting to smash him. She's questioning Bhima wanting to drink his blood. Yes? Well, do you have a super soul channel in your heart? So, when you do, then you know that's what Krishna wants. But there are some things that we know that Krishna wants. And we do those things. And that's the doorway that we go through. Let's take a real simple one. Two simple ones. Three simple ones. Chant. Distribute books. Distribute prasadam. Any doubt? Is that what Krishna wants? You do those things. And the things you're not sure about, you hit the pause button till you keep asking, what, Krishna, what do you want? Okay. Last question in the back.
Guru Maharaj, let me see if I can articulate my question.
It's already answered?
No.
No.
I'm in a situation, it's difficult, and some level of acceptance is there that the individuals involved in this situation are the instruments of Krishna. I see that. And when that acceptance is there, a part of me says, do I have to be involved in the situation? Because the others who are involved, it seems like they're playing the chess game. You know, you make this move, then they're making the next move. And I don't want to play the chess game. You know, so my heart says, you don't need to engage. You know, you step out and don't be part of this chess game. But then there's the other side where maybe I have certain responsibilities and certain duties, and especially when I see that what's happening is not right towards, especially when it's targeted towards somebody very specific that's very dear to me, then I feel that maybe I shouldn't walk away. So there is this acceptance in one sense, and also seems like there is this struggle in accepting how to see that Krishna wants, not that Krishna wants me to play the chess game, but it seems like it. Because when I accept, I feel like, you know, I want to walk away. I don't want to engage in this.
I think I got your question. I know what my answer to that is, but it may not be your answer to that. And you know, a simple phrase is, displace dysfunctionality with functionality. That is, that which is, it's, you know, another way of, be, this is the Gandhi phrase, be that which you'd like the world to be. You know that one. So, I like that one. Now, as you're being that which you like the world to be, or creating, striving towards functionality when there's dysfunctionality, what do you do about the dysfunctionality? Well, you don't have to take part in the chess game. You can observe it and go, gosh, they're playing a chess game. And it's going on, In their view, they're serving Krishna by the chess game. That's how they know how to play, that's how they serve Krishna. Or, in other scenarios. That is, some persons are not exercising what they could be exercising, that is, authority to stop the chess game. They kind of like checked out. And they're handed over the authority to people that are involved in the chess game. They're abdicating instead of delegating. Because the delegating means someone has authority and they have to exercise authority in an appropriate manner. And they kind of like delegated to the chess players. And it's going on. So then I don't want to play chess. I don't have to play chess. And the only other option is check out. I can work towards functionality. Now, that takes a lot of, let's just use the word tolerance of the dysfunctionality. I could give some practical examples, but this isn't the right forum for that, the practical examples. And so, another response is, in the end, truth prevails. Abide by the truth, and truth prevails over darkness. Light prevails over darkness. Just stay with the light. Stay with truth. Abide by truth. When there's dysfunctionality happening or the chess game happening, just abide by truth. And that's safe. That's one of the lessons of Ramayana. Of course, it's a different way of, but the word of my father, and I'm going to uphold the word of my father. And different persons tried to dissuade Ram from that, and he wouldn't budge. It's a virtue. It's one of his chief teachings by his example. Abide by truth. Satyam. And just stay there. And you're protected from dysfunctionality. Krishna's protection, Ram's protection, the Bhagavan's protection. Just stay there. Now, you can say, I'm out of here. Is that abiding by truth? Hardship may be there to abide by truth. Ram endured hardship. No problem. I will not depart from truth. That's, one of the things that he said to Sita, like really intense. Really intense. He said, I can give up my father, I can give up my mother, I can give up Lakshman, I can give up you, but I can't give up keeping my word. This principle of abiding by truth, like, whoa. That's, what does that look like? It's going to look different for different individuals. So now, okay, what's truth? Well, I have to be true to myself, and I don't want to play chess, so I'm out of here. That's truth. That's, you know, one sense of truth. But then, is that, what's the standard of truth? What does our founder Acharya want of us? What does Chaitanya Mahaprabhu want of us? When there's hardship or dysfunctionality or chess playing, people that shouldn't be playing chess, they should be acting decisively. This, you know, what Krishna says to Arjuna is, how is this petty weakness of heart overcome you? You want to check out? You have a duty. And his, you know, I've been, somebody gave a gift, and it was a nice gift. That little Srila Prabhupada's lectures. So it starts with Bhagavad Gita chapter 1. And then something went on a glitch, so then it went back to Bhagavad Gita chapter 1. So I'm hearing it now for the third time because there were two glitches. And, you know, I always had a hard time reading chapter 1 because there's all these names, and because that was in the information zone. But what Prabhupada excavates out of that chapter 1 and then chapter 2 is, you know, the scene of setting it up so that Krishna will speak Bhagavad Gita. And it's Arjuna getting it wrong when he was thinking he was right. And Krishna admonishes him. Even before the, you know, so that was the message yesterday for the Sunday program. There's disturbance. What was Prabhupada's word? It wasn't turmoil, disturbance, some other word. In the world, and it's perplexity, that was the word. And when there's perplexity, what do? Because I'm perplexed. I don't see. And that's the situation where one needs instruction. And so Krishna is giving his instruction. He takes shelter of Krishna, and Krishna instructs him. And he just accepts. I mean, he has, well, wait a minute, what about this, what about that? So he wants clarity. But then he's ready to fight, which is his capacity. And, you know, going back to the Deva Madhava suggestion, which is Krishna already showed him. It's a done deal. These persons who you're concerned about, they're not going to leave the battlefield anyway. We'll go back to your metaphor, the chess players, the Duryodhana and his brothers. They were playing really dirty chess. Okay. Not easy. Not easy. It's easier to talk about, then it's another thing to go through it. But Srila Prabhupada ki jai.